Hello and welcome to Barely Partisan. This is our first official episode, and we are excited to start this podcast journey. My name is Shannon, and I'm one of our co-hosts of the show. I am sharing this adventure into mass media with my friend and podcast partner, Selena.
Hello, my name is Selena, a co-host of Barely Partisan. This is our inaugural episode, and I'm looking forward to diving in. We're going to introduce ourselves to you all and tell you a little bit about our podcast and then dive into a discussion.
Disclaimer, all statements made on this podcast are attributable to the co-hosts and do not reflect the opinions of their employers. So what inspired us to do this podcast? I think so much of the political discourse and the podcasts about politics are so focused on just toxic one side or the other, or highlighting just the candidates or just the parties. And you rarely have a conversation about what does this stuff mean just to voters? How can we have just a regular conversation that discusses what stuff means without super partisan one way or the other, or this side or that side, or making it about the elected officials specifically? And I think it was an opportunity for us to turn down that rhetoric and just talk about what stuff means to voters and how it impacts regular people.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that I've been working in and around politics for more than a decade. And I've listened to a lot of podcasts, not only political podcasts, but my actual favorite podcasts are like True Crime, The Society and Culture, and History ones. Although, now that I think about it, and given the times we're in, I probably should start listening to some self-help, spiritual guidance ones, given what has occurred earlier this month with the elections.
Eric, you're too black, girls. Shout out.
And one thing that I found really interesting about podcasting, or just podcasts, is that, did you know that they root back to the 1980s? And they were called, audio blogs. And then obviously with the development of the internet and being able to do like the development of portable digital audio, like devices being developed to the iPod and the early stuff, podcasting really took off in 2004. So I thought that was cool. Wow. Like we had this whole period of time.
I'm super late.
Yeah.
I was late to Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
Yeah.
And even those platforms, there's so many now. I can't even keep up. Obviously technology is constantly evolving. But I think that podcasting is important for various reasons. Listeners can turn on podcasts for entertainment, to learn something, whether it be educational or for leisure. And you can do this all, which I love, by multitasking. You could be cooking, but listening to a podcast about how to crochet, something of that nature. For me, I like it because I initially just feel super productive. I really got into podcasting, listening to them once the pandemic hit. I was able to lay dogs and do this or clean the house and listen to that. And again, podcasting for me, I just look at it as like a platform to allow for folks to speak about whatever's important to them on any topic. And you will always have an audience. And I think that's what's great about our Barely Partisan podcast, right? When you're listening to a podcast, let's just say political purposes, you don't always have to agree with what we're saying or what's being conveyed, but it gives you the opportunity to listen to the other side. Or you may agree and you might be like, okay, I'm not crazy. This is how government works, or this is going on, and this is how it affects me every day. So it allows you to catch an audience or be that audience and really just think about things from a person's different perspective. And you hope that our podcast can inspire folks to think about how government really can and does affect their daily life choices and the impacts to their families, friends, and communities. Our intention to have a podcast that is what we say it is, Barely Partisan. You know, we're not always right down the line. And sometimes folks on the other side may have a compelling argument as to why things should work the way they do. But then if they don't, I think we should call them out.
Right.
Again.
And that's why I like Barely Partisan, not nonpartisan, because I am partisan.
Right.
I may have changed my party registration for no party preference, which is independent in California, but I do have leanings and I think that's okay. And we're upfront with that.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that we will call out people that we tend to agree with when they need to be called out. And I think getting back to a place where, yes, we have preferred candidates or a preferred party, but that shouldn't cloud or distract us from what things actually mean and how people will be impacted by public policy, or stop us from just having those conversations.
Agreed.
Where we can agree or disagree or have a debate without it turning into some toxic, threatening, horrible, name-calling mess.
Right. No, I agree. Yeah, I think that's kind of like how we came up with our Barely Partisan, a little background on our venture into this space. And again, it's our goal and focus to be informative and be inspiring for folks to really listen and pay attention to what is happening around them in terms of...
Right. And learn too, because we're learn as well. This is more of an educational thing than anything. Yes. And I think it's okay to say when you don't know something, you learn from other people. We learn from each other. We learn from experts we may bring on or things that we cite as we're going through this.
Right,
let's bring back learning in politics.
Let's start with that part right there. We should start with that because I feel like we're now in this space where everybody knows everything and that's just what it is, right? I thought that everything that was said on certain news outlets or even certain local officials or elected officials, I was like, that it's true. There's no lie in there. And as we know, that is not true. And so let's get back to learning, really learning.
Right. Exactly. Thank you, Selena. Yeah. Talking about the 2024 presidential election, the results are in and they have been for a while, even though we still have some states, California, tallying the vote.
Yes.
We don't know how much control one party has of the House, but we will soon. And if you don't know, Google exists because we're not getting to the who won and how and why and what the fuck. Instead of rehashing or diving into an analysis that everyone is focused on, everybody's going to write a thing about, we're going to focus our election debrief on how voters are feeling, specifically how voters cope when the election does not go the way they wanted.
Yeah, a majority of Americans were stressed out before the election day. And now post-elections, emotions are still running high for many of us across the country. This is an important topic because most of us deal with extra stress during the elections, regardless of whether we can name it and or claim it. We live in a political system that is dominated by two major political parties, shall I say. So each cycle, about half of the country has to process and deal with the loss. I want to first start off by saying that Shannon and I are no expert in mental health, nor are we licensed healthcare providers. So this segment and our discussions are going to be based on our own personal feelings and opinions. And so with that being said, let's talk about it. Okay, so let's dive in. Let's talk about this. I think I just really want to talk about maybe like a personal example of how I coped with the election loss. And I had been thinking about this. Actually, I was on a walk earlier this week and I was thinking about how I'm feeling because, again, 19 days ago, the election happened. And this week, if your head wasn't buried somewhere else, everybody should be a little bit aware of what this administration's cabinet is going to look like, which brought back some feelings because I thought I was over the first shock and heartache. Experts say Americans with varying political views will be overcome with emotions in the wake of election results, which I'm feeling again. And some of this is from pride and optimism to disappointment, frustration, and even fear. And I do believe this to be true because, as I said, Shannon, earlier this week, I was thinking about why am I starting to feel the way I felt the day after the election? Right. And I'm like, do I have PTSD of some sort, right? But I found out that this was normal because according to the American Psychology Association, research does show the distress we feel around politics can harm our physical and mental health. And it's only getting worse. And so statistics show that in 2016, the presidential election caused significant stress for 52% of adults. This year, that number jumped 69%. So that is insane. Additionally, many U.S. adults said they were worried that the election results could lead to violence or that the 2024 election could be the end of democracy for the U.S. Now, just think about that. That's what people are fearing. And I will say I'm one of those people. I very openly was in a panic right after. I was in shock once we saw this was not going to go the way we wanted. But I did think about, you know, the violence part and what does this mean for our democracy? That's just a natural feeling for me. So right. I think that I can only imagine how other individuals and maybe folks that aren't, you know, don't work in the area of politics or government, like just the everyday person, how they must be feeling. I mean, there has to be a little bit of that kind of feeling as well. And so I don't know who has it worse in terms of anxiety. Is it folks like you and I, Shannon, who work in this space, or for the everyday person, let's just say my dad or your mom or their mm-hmm. friends, how they're feeling. And to be honest, I didn't even know there was political anxiety versus general anxiety. But political anxiety is a form of stress or unease due to political events, decisions, or discourse. It can arise from sources such as decisive elections, controversial policies, or constant exposure to political charged news and social media. So there is political anxiety. And Shannon, I don't know about you, but I think we might have talked about this a little offline about how you hadn't really looked into turning on the news or diving into anything super deep right after the election. I think we tried to turn it off. I think you said you were going to binge watch some, I don't know, Twilight.
Yes. Yeah, I think I started after my PTSD from 2016. I think 2020 was, I didn't engage as much in 2016 because of kind of that anxiety tied to politics. And I even changed some of my news habits after 2016. So I don't just watch cable news to watch it. I rarely watch it. I usually focus on reading the newspaper or watching local news and then stopping, working something else when they get to national news. So I started doing that after 2016. And then for this election, I personally couldn't get invested because of how devastating 2016 was for me personally. And so I didn't watch any of the debates because I knew how I was going to vote. I think part of my strategy leading up to 2024 to November 5th was limiting my consumption. I was probably on social media a little too much, but I already accepted in my head that what I didn't want to happen could absolutely happen.
Yeah.
But that didn't soften the blow
right.
of election day. And to cope with that, I wasn't on social media at all. After the polls closed on the East Coast, I put my phone on airplane mode. I didn't even want alert. I didn't want people texting me. And I was watching Twilight
right.
on election night because I needed to know. I didn't want the lead up or the drama of it. So it was like maybe 1 a.m. by the time I turned off airplane mode and looked at my social media, and they had already called it. And I was still sad. And I was still had this sense of dread that was different from 2016. But I think because I limited my emotional and mental investment up front, mm-hmm. it wasn't as devastating for me as 2016 was.
And that I think of 2016, I think for me, I was just really heartbroken, right? I think, and it wasn't so much fear. I think it was just heartbroken and disbelief and for various reasons. I think as women, we have this opportunity to have the first female president elected. And I was just super, I'll be honest, it was just women empowerment, right? I just was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And then, right.
Boy.
And
oh,
then,
yeah.
So for me, it was heartache. I remember in 2016, I had to go to work the next day. I couldn't watch Hillary Clinton's concession speech.
Me neither.
I remember I was driving on the freeway and I was going to work. And I remember I was changing the channel on my radio station and they were playing her concession speech live. And I want to say it's maybe on NPR or something. And I heard her voice and I just started bawling uncontrollably in the car. I was hyperventilating. I had to change it. And I'm pretty sure the people next to me thought, what the hell is going on? Because you're crawling in traffic and I'm just bawling. I was just so sad. And then I think about the election before that, right, in 2008, when Barack Obama and it was John McCain. And in that election, I was so excited, more than fear, right? Like, I was like a man of color. Like, there was just this whole momentum behind. And I just thought a breath of fresh air for the Democratic Party. I thought this is what we needed. That election was contentious as well, right? But I think
definitely primary.
I think though, when I look at that election, during that time, we were in a different state, like in the sense that we had the Iraq War going on. And so candidates were really focused on that. They both had their own views about it, right? Whether we should stay in the war, should we get out? But nobody personally attacked anybody. And this is where I'm going to go to present day. We're 2020, 24 election. This is where the fear kicks in for me. I wasn't sad necessarily. I wasn't heartbroken. I was disappointed, but I think I was more fearful because it was the rhetoric from one particular candidate, and we'll go ahead and I will say his name, Trump, in camp. Everything was personal, and it brought out the real worst in people, and that's what I was fearful. And that's what I go back to saying, like, I was really feared of violence. I figured either way this goes, if Kamala won, there was going to be, like, some stuff popping off. Let's just be honest, right? And then I also knew that if Donald won, right, you knew stuff was going to pop off because you can see it now, present day. I was just watching the news and there's people taking to the streets with their KKK stuff going up and down the streets. You're having all these people come out and incite fear. So I knew something was going to happen regardless. And I think that's what I was fearful more of. What does that look like for us? And this time, again, it's fear for me. And I don't really know the answer as to how to manage that, because I, like I said, this week that feeling came back again for me and I was like, oh gosh, right? When you start looking at who he is tapping for his cabinet, I can't even process that right now, right?
The quality of the candidate deteriorated completely from 2008 to 2016 and even worse in 2024, because John McCain, although I didn't support him for president, I was more afraid of his vice presidential pick because she was a wild card who had zero experience. I was a Hillary supporter in 08. Like, I was disappointed when she almost didn't vote for Obama, but I was more relieved when he won because I wasn't sure it was going to happen. It was one of those, my friend called me because they called that election pretty quickly.
Right.
And I was like, the first thing I did was pray for the man because America's racist. Right. So, but I think that, I think you're right that fear of just violence and all the horrible elements that have already always existed in America that have come out and feel more comfortable being out in public. People walking down the street with Nazi flags, right, doing Nazi salute, the KKK being emboldened again, men online talking about your lower body, my choice, just the threat, physical violence, and it's being mainstreamed and not called out as that. Well, makes it scary.
Exactly. And the other thing is, so in this election is, it feels different because we are so much more polarized in the results of the election. Yeah. And you know what I've seen that's interesting is, I don't know about you, but I think we might've talked about this, you and I, like when we were in high school, like how active we were in politics or government. And I think I want to say there was a school here in California that the next day, there was a bunch of kids that showed up with, and again, you can do whatever you want. You're your own person. You're your own beliefs. You have these kids that show up with all these MAGA hats and these Donald Trump flags. And now you have kids that are scared to go to school, right? Because they feel a certain way. Yeah. And so it's not just us as adults, but our children are seeing this, which is, that's the fear too, right?
Yeah. It's tied to something. It's not tied to just this figure on TV who like red hats. It's tied to all the hateful rhetoric. It's tied to January 6th. It's a symbol of all of that. So we can't just dismiss it as if, oh, it's just another display of partisan choice.
No,
that choice is tied to all the rhetoric, to the decisions that have impacted people and all the threats of decisions that will impact people.
Yeah.
So that's a definite huge shift from 2008 and 2020 and 2016. Have to take the threat seriously. And the threats are tied to all of those symbols that are attached to this person and this campaign. So it is different now, and how you cope is different because the weight of the election and the decision is different. And I think that's okay to talk about.
I think whether people said, oh, it doesn't matter, this isn't really going to affect me, I think, like, when you really sit in it, it does affect you. And at least for me personally, it took a toll where I needed 24 hours to just be depressed.
And
I sat in it. And luckily, my significant other that day was super supportive. Like, he was like, what do you need? And I was like, I'm just going to sit here on the couch and I'm going to get a bottle of wine and I'm going to eat popcorn and I'm going to watch whatever crappy reality TV I can. And from sun up to sundown. And then before we went to bed, I said, okay, tomorrow I will get my shit together. I gave myself 24 hours. There's work to be done. And I've since then been taking it day by day. But I will tell you, every time I get a news notification, I'm like, oh gosh, it's, I get scared again.
And it's also a little frustrating for me because the people who do support what happened and are happy about the outcome, I don't think that their lives are going to improve the way they hope they will.
Right.
Because so much of what has been promised is just not reflective of reality. And the idea that only people you disagree with or don't like for whatever reason, whether real or made up in your head, isn't going to protect you either. So I was reading something about people who still don't know that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same thing. So you look for somebody who wants to get rid of Obamacare, quote unquote, because you didn't like President Obama, but you benefit from the Affordable Care Act. So just people who don't understand, whether willfully or unwillfully, how they also will be impacted by some of these policies and this person who just wants to tear down our institutions. And I'm not saying that efficiency couldn't be improved.
Right, right, right.
The idea that this regime is going to benefit Americans as a whole, I don't believe that because nothing they've presented has justified that. And so I'm all for calling out the people that I do vote for when they don't, you know, what they say doesn't align with what the reality is either.
Right.
But I also feel a little bad, not completely, for people who don't understand what they did and how they're going to be impacted by their decision that they based on not what was their best interest.
Right. And it's that point right there. And that part of me, when I do get frustrated, you know, throughout the day, in my head, I'm thinking, you know what? You're going to get what you get and don't throw a fit. Like being super candid, super transparent. I'm like, let's go. Let's go.
Because now they have to govern.
Yep.
And
yes,
good luck.
And yes, we'll see you when we see you. And I think that.
And hopefully some of our institutions will survive. We'll see.
Okay. So I think with that, is it cool if I ask you a couple of questions? If we move on to some questions.
Yes, let's go.
Okay, so this is one thing that I haven't asked, but I want to know, did your employer check in on you after the election?
No.
Okay.
Honestly, we have resources available to employees, and not everybody had the same view, right, on the outcome. So some people in my organization got what they wanted. So I don't think it would have been appropriate for them to check on staff. We've had the discussion offline, but I think this would have been a hard thing to discuss at work. So I'm glad my employer didn't bring it up.
Great. Lucky for you.
What about you?
It was this awkward 15-minute meeting where they opened the floor for people to say whatever they would want to say. I think once everybody just stared at each other, I think management got the hint that nobody was going to say anything. And that's how it happened. And then I tried to give them a benefit of the doubt. Maybe they were really concerned about us, but then I was just like, huh, it was interesting. I just didn't know. I did have some friends check in, and some are no longer my friends, and others we're all on the same page. But I will be honest, I have stopped talking to a few folks, and while for a friend in particular that I knew where they were on things, I avoided for almost 8 days before I returned a call. It's one of those things.
You had to set those boundaries, right? Because that showed you how different this is. We're not talking about a difference in tax policy. We're talking about a difference in people's humanity and viewing people as human beings and how you treat them and taking rights away in a regular policy.
No, it wasn't. And you know what's interesting? One of these individuals was like, I thought you said that this wouldn't affect our friendship and that you valued our friendship. And I said, I do. And that's why I'm asking you why. And of course, right. I was supposed to take the high road. And then my last sign off to them were like, I'm glad that you have two sons and you don't have daughters or LGBTQ plus children. You could probably sleep good.
Yeah. I think the high road is overrated sometimes. But, after 2016, I was like, look, they go low. I'm going lower in the gutter.
That is me. I will live in the gutter.
Right.
Yes.
Definitely. We could both be here because the bar is in hoop. So cool. We have to stop pretending as though this is
normal
and it shifted. And we have to adjust to that reality in order to move forward. So I'm a big believer in, hey, sometimes people are in your life for a season and it may be time to move on. And that's
exactly.
Okay. This is America. You have the right to believe what you want to believe and vote how you want to vote. And I have the right to keep who I want in my life and leave others in the dust.
Yes, correct.
I have a question for you. How long did you wait until you checked the news coverage or social media after the election?
I waited 24 hours and then I couldn't help myself. And interesting, though, I watched the other side's news media coverage because I wanted to see.
Oh, you're brave.
I know. And I do this a lot, though. I think people, like when I tell people that, they're like, why? And I said, it's got you want to know what they're saying just because I feel if I'm naive to, oh, they couldn't be saying that type of stuff. I said, I just want to see how they're framing the issues, the outcomes. So the next day before I turned in or turn to the other normal news outlets that I listen to, or even I listened to a podcast that was podcasting in real time. I didn't really listen to them just yet either. I went to the other side and I was like, okay, let me hear what you guys are all saying. So yeah, I did that to myself. And then I just couldn't stop. And for 48 hours, I was obsessed. I was like in the middle of the night, I'd get up and I'd look at my phone and be like, okay, what buzz? Let me see. And my significant other is like, what are you doing? And I felt like, okay, am I crazy? I need to stop. I need to get back to a regular schedule. But yeah, I jumped in it the following day. What about you?
Yeah, I was a little bit obsessed with following some of the accounts that were tracking the election way more closely than I was. Didn't watch Kamala's concession speech. I couldn't do it. But then it was comforting seeing other people have that feeling of this is what you wanted. Good luck. You know what I mean? I don't engage with crazy on social media. I will block. I will mute. And I do follow accounts that I agree with. I don't follow cable news in general. There may be a couple of journalists that I like. But because it all has spin and perspective. But I also knew that I was a little too into it. So I moved where the Twitter app is on my phone. So it's not on like the immediate screen. I used to try to just reduce my engagement with it. And I'm thinking about getting Blue Sky or whatever. I keep saying I'm going to leave Twitter, but I'm not because I do find stuff that I enjoy and I learn about on there because I don't have TikTok.
Yeah, I've read a lot of good things about Blue Sky. And I think a lot of folks are trying to move in the space.
I get tired of the ad. And it's become way more toxic. But I'm trying to just overall reduce my social media usage, but I haven't watched cable news at all. I watch local news. I refuse to watch any national. I would just turn the channel once they start talking about national news. And then I'm reading more California papers. I ended my Washington Post subscription. I canceled it. I'm trying to reduce my national news intake for now and just follow more local, more California, or just non-political news. So I'm still on that reduce news diet.
You have to do what you have to do to take care of yourself. And so if that's the way, then, and it works for you, great. Let's see. One more question I got from you. Oh, this was an interesting. I had come across this on, I forget what platform, but somebody had posed the question, should the day after an election be a holiday, like where you don't have to go to work or school? And I thought about that, and I think it should. It only happens every 4 years. Like, why not?
Every two years.
I know we should. I was trying to skip that because I feel like gave me anxiety right now when you said that. That literally just gave me anxiety. But I'm saying like for a presidential election. Let me just rephrase that.
Okay.
Presidential.
Okay.
Because a lot of people were, I remember the next day, I was like, I do not want to go to work. I do not want to do anything. And I had a couple of friends that kept their kids home from school. So there was just this conversation. And do we think we need a timeout the day after a presidential election? I thought, maybe. I don't know.
I would support making Election Day a holiday. Because so many people live in states where limiting how people vote is a voter suppression tactic, not a public policy, right? Oh, in states where they reduce the places where you can vote, so there's these long lines, they plan on purpose to reduce turnout. So I would support a holiday or a paid holiday or whatever. However, what makes it easiest for folks to vote,
the day,
so they're getting in trouble for missing work or they're not losing hours for missing work to vote. But the day after, no.
I think I'm just going to keep taking the day after.
I think if the ballot, people want to keep their kids home, or if you're able to stay home and or have that capacity. But yeah, no. Day of, not after. Day after.
Okay, Shannon, I just wanted another holiday, but you crushed that dream real quick. So, okay.
Crushing dreams over here. Crushing dreams. I have a question. We talked about this a little bit, about disappointment after election. Mm-hmm. Other than this, have you, or can you remember the first time you were disappointed by an election, or have you ever felt disappointed about an election
before? No, I mean, I think just like the 2016, I think everything else, again, because it was just different. I think that the state of our country was different. I think that the candidates, they were running different types of campaigns. And this was, 2016 was probably, besides this one as well, the most personal. And I was trying to think about, before I was born, were there any other elections that captivated folks the way the 2016 or this last one did? And there wasn't too much out there. I think the parties were different. They were traditional. And now that I think about things, as I'm slowly trying to look towards the future, like, what is the next presidential election going to look like and feel like? Right.
Even for me, my first presidential election was Al Gore. That was the first time I got to vote in a presidential. So I was very excited. I had registered to vote right at 18, 2 years before. I was a big Bill Clinton person. So this was his VP. I wasn't super excited, but I was excited. And I think the disappointment of him losing was sad. But what devastated me was the process by which he lost. So the whole hanging chads thing in Florida, the voting not being secure and the Supreme Court basically coming in and stopping the count.
Right.
So that process being unfair was devastating to me personally. I remember when they finally ended it, I was in class in undergrad and I just burst into tears. And I was so devastated. I changed my major. I was a poli sci major going into college. I changed my major after that election to psychology because I was like, everybody's crazy. None of this makes sense. And so I only went one semester with no poli sci classes. I wound up double majoring after that. But that was the first time where the election process was devastating to me. And I questioned the fairness and the process of our elections. Mm-hmm. That was the first election for me that was devastating enough to actually like change some of my behavior.
Mm-hmm. Seems like we've come a long way.
Right out here. It's like rural streets.
It is. It's not safe. Gosh. I think that this last election, it was just an eye-opening experience I've never felt before. I really had to learn. And like how you said in 2000 with the Gore, that changed how you perceived elections and things that you had to do because of that first disappointment. I think that this election has done that for me. I really have to set my boundaries. I figured that out real quick. I know I say that. We say that a lot, but I really did, especially cutting ties with friends, former friends. And I will tell you, this one individual in particular, I have known since I was 14 years old. And what's interesting is we had been through a lot. They were part of the armed forces. So they've seen war. We've raise kids together, just all this stuff. And but I had to do it. And I knew that was a challenge for me because I feel like I've always been this individual when it comes to what I do in terms of my professional life and then my political being and where I fall on issues, I tend to not talk about them a lot with folks. And even though folks always try to bait me into a conversation, even with my family, yeah. I don't. Like, I mean, I will if I have to school them on things, but I typically don't because I don't feel like I've always felt that people that you can have those real raw conversations with, and then you know there's folks that you can. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just try to stay away from it as much as possible. But I knew this election was different. And I either had to stand up and be like, no, I don't agree. And you're batshit crazy if you do believe that, but I will respect it. But that just means I'm going to have to like you from a distance. I'm not going to sit here and pretend we're the same individuals or that we're like-minded people because we're not like-minded people. That's the difference. I realize I can't use that as, oh, they're just nice and we've coexisted for so many years. I'm not. No, I guess I was really cutthroat. Either you're with me or you're against me. And I'm not saying that in a way to be like, you can't believe in who you want to believe in, but you have to give me something more than just the fact that this new administration is going to make America great again. You have to give me something.
Right. And if there has to be more,
you can't do that for me, then that's where I'm going to set my boundaries. And I think moving forward, setting boundaries, really focusing on things that I can control with my fear and anxiety. And I'm with you. I think I should take some of what you're doing and really focus back on California politics, because granted, we do live in a blue state, but if you look at the election results, there was a big jump for Californians to vote for the other party. And
blue states have blue problems. Exactly. We have problems in the state too. We did not have all the answers by any stretch.
And so
there's plenty to do.
Exactly. And so I think leaning into my local politics, my state politics, and how I can be a resource on that level. And just, I know this is going to sound weird, but let the federal government do what the federal government's going to do.
And I think we had another question on here about self-care after the election. I think self-care includes that mental and physical boundaries that you set for yourself. And prioritizing, looking in and locally and what you can, focusing on what you can control and your spirit influence, I think is an important part of that. Because we're people who are engaged in this and we care about this stuff and we can't completely turn it off. So how do you refocus that energy to something that's more substantive and feeds you and feeds your desire to continue to be helpful and impactful?
Right. No, I would agree. And I think that part of this whole self-care and what we do moving forward is really try to find folks that I trust and can connect with, because not too many people will talk about their political anxiety or stress.
Right.
And I think that being able to talk about issues that this new administration, these uncomfortable issues of these new administration, you have to have an outlet to talk to folks about that. And I think that I'm already seeing it now. Significant other is an attorney and then an administrative law judge. And we already had folks reach out to us. I have a friend who has a daughter who has a college friend in another state that needs some reproductive health stuff. And so we're trying to help the friend. Again, we just can't get away from it. And being able to find people that we can trust and talk about these issues with, hey, like, it's strange because it's like, we really are thinking of a strategy. Yesterday, I had an inquiry about an immigration lawyer. And if we know any that do any pro bono works, I to my significant other and I was like, does so-and-so do pro bono work? Like, I feel like I just can't catch a break sometimes with this stuff. And so being able to find a safe space to talk about issues like this with our friends or, you know, even family, colleagues, like, hey, have you guys heard about this? Do you guys know of anybody? And I feel like we're doing this whole underground strategy of how do we help other individuals, right, besides ourselves. Yeah. I think that's good. It's good to connect with folks that are really like-minded. And I think I really need like-minded people around me during this time.
Right. Like-minded doesn't mean you agree on everything all the time, but you agree that you want to help people. You agree that human beings deserve a chance to be helped, and you can have a disagreement about policy without attacking people personally and get back to a space where we can use our collective voice and knowledge and our networks to be useful and helpful to people, get what they need to live the lives that they want. That's the version of freedom I care about. You living your life the way you want to, that doesn't negatively impact other people doing the same. That may look different under whatever is going to happen nationally, right. But you should always be able to talk about it without insulting or threatening people. And we need more outlets for that, which is one of the reasons we're doing our podcast.
Exactly. No, you nailed it. And again, for many of us, these are strong emotions, right? They reflect like heightened stakes. And really, this last election has been called one of the most important elections in U.S. history so far. And as many of us, me in particular, I contemplate what the results mean for like my values and my communities and the hopes for the future. There's a lot at stake. And I will start with Barely Partisan being a platform for us to discuss these tough issues, the scary issues, you know, to bring to light, or as you said, Shannon, calling people out on their crap and just looking at everything in a very holistic and realistic view. I don't know what's going to happen on January 20th, but I do hope that I'm going to be in a better headspace. I hope that a lot of us that have the same fears and anxiety can take a deep breath that day. And as much as I hate to admit it, I hope it's a smooth transition.
That's the decision of the electorate, and I support a smooth transition of power, period. Yep. Doesn't mean that I don't have to like it, but that's what being an American is to me, is that our institutions provide for that. So good luck to the people who won.
Yes.
But we are going to keep engaging and keep having conversations, and Barely Partisan is our way to wrestle back some of our control to converse and educate people on what's going on. So I'm looking forward to this journey with you, Selena.
Likewise, Shannon. Let's see who will engage and who will show up, and we'll just keep on talking about it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for joining Barely Partisan for our first episode.
And now that you've listened to us and our podcast, we want to bring you into our conversation. So to learn more or ask questions or make suggestions for future episodes, click on the link in our show notes and sign up for our newsletter. And with that, Shannon, it's been great.
It's been wonderful.
It's been something. I shouldn't say it's been great. It's great talking to you, but it's been something.
It's been something.